So I'm going to share with you today a Ma'or Enayim. As you recall, the Ma'or Enayim was from Reb Nochum of Chernobyl. And this is a piece on the pasuk of Avram Zokein Baba Yomim. Avram was old. Baba Yomim became with his days.
That's in this week's
Sutra? It was in this yesterday's parsha. So there's a medrash that says as follows. Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi Pasach, Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi opened his drasha on this pasuk with the famous pasuk that we say on Rosh Chodesh, Baruchi Nafshi Es Hashem, my soul thanks Hashem, Hashem Elikai Gedalta Miyod, Hashem, my God, you are exceedingly great, Hoyd V'Hoda Levashta, splendor and beauty you clothed yourself in. Okay, Hoyd V'Hoda Levashta. Says the Medrash, where did Hashem garb himself in splendor and in beauty? Shenis hadarta, you were beautified, venis labashta hoyd, and you were dressed in splendor, besinai, at Mount Sinai, b'shosh omri Yisrael nasa v'nishma, at the time that Klal Yisrael said nasa v'nishma, at that point Hashem was beautified. Okay, so that's hoyd v'hodol levashta. Where did that take place? That took place at Sinai. Dover Acher says Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, I'll tell you another explanation. Shehadarta li Avram, you beautified Avram, Bahadra Zikna, with the beauty of a beard or the beauty of old age. Zeshamar Kosev Avram Zokin Baba Yamim. This is the pasuk which says that Avram was elderly, Baba Yamim. Either it means elderly or it means bearded. So really what we're also going to cover today is the concept of why it is that Jews have beards.
Does it have any reference anywhere for a woman getting old and being beautiful?
Sure, it says the same exact thing about Sarah.
So
exact same Lashon.
And that's why we get beautiful.
It's mamash the same. Vavram v'Sarah zekenim boim bayamim.
Yeah, where?
That's the language of the pasuk. It was last week's pasuk, I think. Yeah, Vavram v'Sarah zekenim. That's how that pasuk begins. Okay. So, let us not get distracted with details. Says Reb Nochum that, as we know, everything in this world has its source in higher worlds. This world is only a reflection, and as we know, reflections reflect a mirror image of that which it is reflecting. That's one of the reasons it's called a reflection, is because it reflects. Now, yes, they were very profound this morning. So, Reb Nochum explains that one of the things that happens, and it's just helpful to know the structure so we know what we're dealing with. One of the things which happens is we need to analyze this concept that we constantly talk about our midos, about the character traits that each of us have. Where do these come from, and what's the point? So we've talked about this a bunch in the past, but it's worthwhile reviewing the process called hishtalshelus. Hishtalshelus comes from the word of a shalsheles. A shalsheles is a chain. Okay? Now, the purpose of every chain is to connect two different points. Oftentimes, a shalsheles reconnects with itself. That's how you have bracelets and necklaces. But very often, a shalsheles is made to chain one thing to another. And one link interacts with another link to connect two things which are far from one another. If they're very close, you don't need a shalsheles, then you can just have one ring. Right, so the purpose of a chain is when you need to connect two things which are not that close to one another, you bring a chain. And therefore, there's a process called hishtalshelus, which is the chaining of creation itself, meaning that there are these exalted midos that emanate from Hashem, these character traits that Hashem brought into existence. And through the process called hishtalshelus, Hashem lowered the chain, if you will, of these midos from the godly midos all the way until they come to the point of the human being, so that each of us has the same midos, but obviously we have them in a much more crass form. That's the result of this process called Hishtalshelus, where Hashem emanates these pure, pristine, godly midos. By the time they reach a physical world, these midos express themselves in very physical ways due to the fact that they've been lowered into this world. That's the process called Hishtalshelus. That's this process of the lowering of the midos from their exalted form till they come into the human being. The Mikubalim write that these, we know that there are 13 midas, right? We speak about these 13 midas on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur especially. We say them every day in Tachron. Hashem, Hashem, Ki Orachem V'chanan, Erech HaPayim, Rav Chesed V'yemes, Netzach Chesed Alofim, Hashem, Hashem, who is compassionate, he's slow to anger, and so on and so forth. These are the 13 attributes. They're called in the Zohar the 13 strands of the beard. Yud Gimel, Tikune Diikna. They're called the 13 strands of the beard. Now, referring to Kaviyachol, anthropomorphically speaking, I love using that word because I don't know what it means, neither does anybody else. But what it suggests is obviously Hashem does not have any physical qualities, but that the beauty of the human being, as Chazal referred to it, is, at least the beauty of a man, is the beard. And similarly, these 13 properties are referred to, Kaviyachol, as the strands of God's beard. Now, when it comes down to the practical level in the human being, what are we saying? So the Almighty lowers these godly midos into the realm where the human being has each of these qualities, but by the time it comes down here, they're no longer godly qualities. They are mu'uriv toiv bira. They're confused, they're convoluted between good and evil. That's the reality of this world. So you have these pristine, godly attributes. They're lowered into a physical human being. But for us, it requires a process called Bechira. Bechira is the staple of being a human being, which requires us to choose. So it's a fascinating thing. Here we are the owners of exalted godly midas, but they don't express themselves in us in a godly way. They express themselves in very confused terms. And we are called upon to use our brains, our ethical, moral choice, to choose the midas and to utilize them in a godly way. Now, we could use the very same midah in a sick way. Obviously, this applies to each one of the midahs. But when I was a kid, there was a guy that hung around our house, no longer alive, who spoiled me something terrible. And I used to get daily large packs of Wrigley's Juicy Fruit and Spearmint and who knows what. He was doing a tremendous act of kindness. The only thing is that Billy Potashnik, who was our dentist, had a full-time job. And I lost numerous teeth due to Juicy Fruit and Spearmint and all the other things. Now, outwardly, it's an act of kindness, right? Everybody who wants to give you candy and gum is doing an act of kindness. But at some point, it's a corrupted kindness. It's no secret to anyone that people, and this happens, Rahman al-Itzlan, with parents who have children who are addicted to drugs, and children come to them for money, and they feel bad for the kid, so they give them money. Right? Outwardly, It's an act of kindness. But in the world of truth, it's a corrupted kindness. It's called a chesed nefula. It's a fallen kindness. And the same applies to every one of the midas. Every one of the midas can be used in a corrupted way, and that's the downfall of the mida coming into a lowly physical world. Our job is to utilize, to analyze the mida, and to utilize the mida in an exalted way. So Chazal tells us as follows. It's a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos. The Pasuk says, Uboy Sidbak. You should cleave to Hashem. Says the Gemara, V'chi efshar lidavek b'Kadosh Baruch Hu v'ala eish eichlehu. How can a person cling or cleave to Hashem? Hashem is an all-consuming fire. You know what happens if you cleave to fire? You get burnt. How can a person possibly cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Says the Gemara, El hadbeik b'midoisav. Cling to Hashem's midos. Mahu rachum, just as he is compassionate, af atarachum, so too should you be compassionate. Mahu chanun, just like he has rachmanis, he does for others, af atachanun, and so with each one of the midas. What's more, says the Gemara, let's see if I have the exact language of the Gemara, it's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu that in any time of tzara, He says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to remember these 13 attributes of mercy, because at any time, she Yisrael oisim lefanai kiseder azeh, any time that Klal Yisrael will do this order of Hashem, Hashem, kerachem v'chanan erach apayim rav chesed v'yemes, I will turn to them in compassion. Says the Maranayim, it doesn't say that Klal Yisrael should say the 13 attributes of mercy. It says anytime Klal Yisrael will do the 13 attributes of mercy. That's very different from saying them. This is probably the source of that which we call lip service versus action. Hashem's not interested in the lip service of us talking about his midas. Hashem is interested in our actually emulating and doing them. And that's where a person has the ability to elevate the mida by emulating Hashem, and thereby purifying the mida in such a way that he becomes owner of it, and he has used the process of bechira to elevate it. My father said on Friday night that he was asked, why was it that Eliezer needed to use a shliach? Why wouldn't he have gone to find a wife for Avram? Why would Avram not have gone himself to find the wife for Yitzchak? It's not the kind of thing you give over to a messenger. So why would he have given that over to Eliezer? He should have gone and done it himself. So he said that the only way for Avram to have figured out whether or not Rivka was worthy of coming into Avram's home was to find out if she was a balas chesed. How do you find out if somebody's a balas chesed? How do you find out if somebody knows how to do acts of kindness? You test them, right? You give them an opportunity to give. Said Avram had perfected the midas hachesed to such an extreme degree that all Avram knew to do was to give. Avram Avinu emulated Hashem, right? Hashem can never receive. Hashem is the ultimate bal chesed. He needs nothing, so he can't receive. Avram perfected the midah to such a degree where Avram could not receive. So Avram Avinu couldn't go do the test himself because he didn't have the capacity to receive. He needed to send somebody who still had the capacity to receive. So he sent Eliezer, who had the ability to receive. He also gave another answer, which was great. Based on a story with there were two tzaddikim. One whose chassidim, when they would come in with their kvitlach, would give a great deal of money. And the second, when his chassidim came, dropped a few cents on the table, but really were not much money givers. So these two tzaddikim met, and the one who didn't get much money said to the other one, why is it that when your chassidim come, they dump all kinds of money on your table? And when my chassidim come, they're basically stingy, and they don't know how to give. So this tzaddik says to them, let me tell you what happens. He says, what happens when a chassid comes into a rebbe is that the rebbe emanates his own midas, and it ends up totally consuming and enveloping the chassid. So what happens is as follows. If you have a rebbe who loves money, so his chassid comes into him and immediately takes over the rebbe's character of loving money. This energy flows from the rebbe, and therefore the chassid adopts the same attitude. Well, since the rebbe loves the money, the chassid loves the money, so he really doesn't want to part with it. So he keeps it in his pocket. He says, conversely, with a rebbe who despises worldly things and money, so the same energy flows to the chassid, right? So the chassid despises the money. See, he empties his pocket and gives it all to the rebbe. So he says the very simple thing that goes on is that you love money, so your chassidim come into you, and they feel that they need to hold on to the money, so they keep it. On the other hand, I hate money, so all my chassidim come in and give away the money. So he said that what happened with Avram Avinu is that Avram understood that the moment he would come into Rivka's company, or whoever the young lady was going to be, of course they'd act in kindness, because there was no option. When you're in Avram's presence, all you do is act in kindness. So he had to send somebody who didn't, the energy didn't flow from them in such with such an extreme, so that they would be able to really have free choice and operate in a realm of free choice to choose whether or not to do chesed. So Avraham Avinu epitomized this aspect of emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed to such a degree. Here the Maharanayim introduces now another aspect, and it really answers a very fundamental question about the structure of the Siddur. Right before Haidu, every day, we say something called Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel is a brisa. Rabbi Shmuel Eimer, Bishleish Asimidus HaTorah Nedershes Bohem, that there are 13 attributes through which the Torah is developed. And it goes through 13 very, very technical Talmudic principles. Kal v'chomer, gzeira shava, all these various really technical things that have absolutely no relationship whatsoever to the structure of davening. It doesn't have a relationship with the things which preceded it, which were the karbones. It certainly has no relationship with that which succeeds it, which is the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's in there like a sore thumb. And what is it doing in the Siddur? Rabbi Shmuel Eimer explains the Maharanayim that these 13 attributes, these 13 methods of Torah development, legalistic Torah development, correspond exactly to the 13 attributes of mercy. That these 13 attributes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we try to emulate, are in essence these 13 methods through which the Torah is developed. Just that here they appear in a legal form, where in their higher stage they are these 13 attributes. What's the point? The point is, there's a great piece, I'll put it into my own words, but this is what the Pius Etzner Rebbe says in Derech HaMelech. He talks about the tzaddikim who were not necessarily profound scholars. And how is it that they had the insights into Torah that they had? So he says that there are really two ways to get to know something. We use Einstein as an example. So there's one person who's fascinated by Einstein's theories. So he goes ahead and he researches every method, everything that Einstein wrote, every speech that Einstein gave, everything. He becomes a Einstein addict from A to Z. He does it to such a degree where it begins to alter his method of thinking. He begins to think like Einstein. And in truth, he's able to almost predict what would Einstein say in such a situation. How would he analyze this? And it completely changes his method of thinking. Then he bumps into somebody, and he says to him, and they begin speaking the theories of physics and whatever else Einstein thought about. I have no idea what he was about, but they say that he spoke about physics and math and that kind of stuff. So they begin speaking about it, and this guy also begins to spew Einsteinian theories. So he says to him, did you read the books? Never read a thing. He says to him, did you listen to the speeches? Never heard him speak. So how can it be that you know? He says, because I know Einstein. He and I grew up together. We were in school together. We went to, you know, to class. I know Einstein. Never read one of his books. So the Piasetzer Rebbe says that there are two ways to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can know Hashem through his Torah, or you can know Hashem by knowing Hashem, and therefore know Torah through knowing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Mor Naim, explains this further. What does it mean to know Hashem? To know Hashem is to cleave to his midos, is to know Hashem Yisbaruch by emulating his character. He says, and by doing that, when a person integrates each one of these godly qualities into his life, where he utilizes the midos to serve Hashem, he says, when a person is compassionate and does acts of kindness, when a person is in Erech HaPaim, he's slow to anger. He's patient. As a result of that, he's gifted the corresponding midah, and that is a person who has truly acquired Torah. Versus somebody who dabbles a great deal with the knowledge of Torah, but has corrupt midahs, that person has no true relationship with Torah. So Eli Brach suggested on Shabbos that this is the meaning that Chazal say, Derech Eretz Kadma L'Torah, that Midos precede Torah, because it is only through the integration of proper Midos that a person really can ever acquire Torah. Without that, they have a great deal of intellectual knowledge, but it's not Torah. Without the proper Midos, the Torah cannot become integrated into the person to the degree where they own Torah. Zeh shekana chachma, a zaken, shekana chachma. Therefore, the same word, he says, is used to describe the beard, as is to describe a zaken, a elder person, a person who we're supposed to respect. Because, as we said earlier, there are the 13 strands of the beard, which are those 13 midos that a person's supposed to integrate, and therefore the Torah uses the same term to describe the beard as the Torah uses to describe an elder, which is held in high esteem, because it is through the integration of the 13 midos that a person comes to zikna, that a person comes to being an elder, a respected scholar. Now, this is the meaning of the term Hoid V'Hodar Lavashta. When we speak of Hashem Yisbarach, so we say that Hashem garbed himself in Hoid V'Hodar Lavashta. What's a lavush? A lavush is not the true essence of something. A lavush is a garment, right? It's clothing. Is not the essence, it's something which is a malbush, something in which somebody enclothes themselves. Hashem allowed these midas to come into a levush in this world. He allowed these midas to come into the form of a garment in this world so that the human being can take it and elevate it. That's the splendor of Hashem. The splendor that we bring to Hashem is when we take the Midah and we work through that character trait and elevate it and utilize it to emulate Hashem. So what's the language that the Pasuk uses when it speaks about respecting the elder? Go ahead, Liba. The term is vehadarta pnei zaken. The words that the Torah uses is vehadarta, you should cause splendor to pnei zaken. The Torah uses the same terminology. Doesn't say, like it says by kabed esavicha vesimecha. Doesn't use the word kabed. It uses the word vihadarta. It uses the word for splendor and beauty. Because vihadarta pnei zaken is a person who brings the midah into such a to such a level where it becomes beautified, where it becomes splendorous.
You also have to pause and mention that it also uses that term for the Eishes Chayim.
There you go. Levusha, using that same term as well. It's levush. How does the pasuk end? V'hadarta pnei zaken. Pasuk concludes v'yireisa melekecha. You shall fear your God. Elekecha. So the Marnaim says that a person should understand that this is how a person becomes unified with Hashem. This creates the unity between Hadbek b'midoisav, cling to Hashem Yisbarach, is the method through which a person becomes one with Hashem. As a result of a person becoming one with Hashem, just like the HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Torah are one, as a result, the person is gifted the gift of Torah. Sivireisa, a person should tremble me'elekecha, from your God, your personal God, meaning this is the method through which a person clings to Hashem, becomes a personalized God. This is your God, because it is through the Tikkun Amidus that a person is able to come to a unity with Hashem. So we now understand why the book of Bereshis precedes the book of Shmais. There aren't very, very few mitzvahs. I think there's three or four mitzvahs in all of Sefer Bereishis. If it's a book of laws, then the Torah should begin, like Rashi says at the beginning of Chumash, it should start from HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. Why does the Torah give us the entire book of Bereishis? It's not a history book. It's an instruction book on Midas. And the book of Bereishis precedes the book of Shmais, precedes the book of Mitzvahs, because it is only through integrating the lessons of Sefer Bereishis that a person can come to accept, to receive the book of Shmais. Tell a story, I think I shared the story with you before, about the Rebbe Bzisha. The Reb Zisha was once approached by a fellow who was tortured by dreams. He kept on having dreams that his father came to him and told him to convert to Christianity. And night after night after night. This is soon, very soon after his father's death, and he was tortured by these dreams. So the Reb Zisha said to him, go to the caretakers of the cemetery and have them dig up the grave. Because as they were digging the grave, one of the cemetery workers had a necklace with a cross on it. And the cross fell into the grave, and that's why you're having these dreams. Get the cross out of the grave, and the dreams will stop. Sure enough, they dug up the grave, they found the necklace, and the dreams stopped. Well, word of this story made its way to Vilna, to the Vilna Goyen. And they said to him, "With you know, you dismiss the chassidim so you know so quickly out of hand. Listen to this story." So the Vilna Gaon listened to the story and said, "Oh, no big deal. It's a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi tells a very similar. The Jerusalem Talmud tells a very similar story. So big deal. So he knew the Yerushalmi." Now, this surprised the chassidim even more, because the Reb Zisha was not known to be a scholar. So they came back to him and said, "Rebbe, you know, the story was repeated to the Vilna Gaon, and he said it's a Yerushalmi." So Reb Zisha smiled and said, "I'll tell you the truth." He said, "I didn't ever learn the Yerushalmi, but I knew it from the same place the Yerushalmi knew it from." Goes back to the story with Reb Meir Primishlana. Reb Meir Primishlana was used to go every day and climb up an icy path to the spring, to the natural spring, which is up on a mountain. So there were some hoodlums in town who decided that they wanted to have some fun, and they were going to wait and ambush Reb Meidl on his way up the mountain. So as he started sprinting up the mountain, these guys followed him and slipped on the ice and cut themselves and bruised themselves. And as much as they tried, they couldn't get up. And here was this elderly man who sprinted up the mountain like a, you know, like a little boy. So they waited for him as he came down, and now they had a newfound respect for him. So they said to him, Rabbi, you should know that we had an ambush here waiting for you. How is it that you make it up the mountain like this when we're much younger than you, we couldn't do it? So he said to them in Yiddish, Am is gebinden fin oivim, falt minish fin hinten. If one is connected from above, you don't fall below. What the Reb Zisha was saying is, he knew it from the same place the Yerushalmi was. He was a zaken shekana chachma. Reb Zisha, who emulated these midas, was gifted the gift to understand that which the Talmud Yerushalmi taught, despite the fact that he hadn't learned it. But not that it's an additional gift, but that this is the true way to acquire Torah. Says the Maharnaim that this is the meaning, and it just takes on a whole new aspect when we look at these words now. What are the two most famous words that Klal Yisrael has said in history? Na'aseh v'nishma. We will do and we will hear. Says the Maharnaim that this is the essence of na'aseh v'nishma. Na'aseh v'nishma means we will do, and then v'nishma, we will understand, we will hear. If we will do, meaning not that we're going to babble and say the 13 attributes, but we will live, nasa, we will do, we will emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'nishma, then we'll merit to hear, then we'll merit to understand. That's the essence of nasa v'nishma. That's Kabbalah Satayr. Kabbalah Satayr is a Jew's commitment to emulate HaKadosh Baruch. What do we say in Ezras? Ashrei ish, sheyishma l'mitzvaysecha, v'seyroscho dvorcho yosem alibay. There's an aspect of yishma l'mitzvaysecha. We got to listen to what the mitzvahs have to say. Because it's v'seyroscho udvorcho yosem alibay. It's a person who integrates Torah and udvorcho and Hashem's words he places upon his heart. Meaning he integrates Torah, then a person's able to hear what Torah has to say to him. Therefore, the Medrash says at the opening of the parasha, "V'Avram zaken baba yamim." Avram was a zaken baba yamim. Says Rabbi Yehuda bar Loi, "Baruch inav shias Hashem." My soul blesses Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, my personal God. Gadalta miyoid, you're exceedingly great. Hoid v'hodol levashta, because you enclosed, you embodied this splendor and this beauty. Where did Hashem embody it? Where did Hashem enclose it? Where did He put it? He put it in us. He allowed His midas to be lowered into our being so that we can take those midas and elevate them and integrate them in such a way where we can emulate our Kadosh Baruch Hu. Says Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, Shenis Hadarta v'nis Labashta, where was the moment of the greatest beauty, the greatest splendor in history? It happened at Sinai. Where did it happen? It happened when Klal Yisrael said, Nasa v'nishma. That's where this moment of supreme beauty, of supreme splendor came out. When Klal Yisrael understood at the receiving of the Torah that it wasn't going to happen through diligent study, but it's going to happen through Nasa, by emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'nishma, and then have the ability to learn. My brother Freud related that he was once, a mashulach was on the street in Chicago and stopped Ephraim and asked him for a ride. So Ephraim picked him up and gave him a ride. So he said, you know, your number, I don't know what it was, number three or four, you know, visibly apparent Jews who I've stopped. The first three told me, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I got to go learn. So Ephraim shared with him a vort that he heard, that it says by the two times in Bereshis that it says that there was an ish, there was a person. It says by Esav, Vayeovik ish imoy ad olos hashachar, that he struggled with an ish until the morning came. Say Chazal, who was it? It was Esav's heavenly body, right? It was the angel of Esav who he struggled with. Then it says by Yosef that he met a person in the Miyam Tzeish, it says. He found a person in the field. He asked him, where did my brothers go? So he directed him to where his brothers went. Say Chazal, who was that ish? It was the Malach Gavriel, right? So this commentary says, how do you know that this ish is Esav and this ish is Gavriel? This ish is a good guy and this ish is a bad guy. You know, if they're both ish, maybe they should both be Gavriel, they should both be Esav. So he says, because there's a major difference. What happens after Yaakov finishes struggling with the angel and he says to him, Barcheni, give me a bracha. Says the angel to him, I got to leave. Ki Ola Shachar, where are you going? Says Rashi, I got to go sing Shira. I got to go learn, right? I got to go do my thing. He says, you don't have time to give a Jew a bracha? You got to go run and do your religious thing. That's Esav. If you have time to point out to somebody the directions on how to get somewhere, that's the Malach Gavriel. Say Chazal, the term of the Torah is the same thing. But the guy who's got to run doesn't have time for another Jew to give him a bracha. That's the Sar of Esav. You want to know who's the Ish Gavriel? That's the person who takes the time out to give somebody else directions to help a Jew. If you look through the tradition of Klal Yisrael and you speak about, and I'm not talking about the Gedolei Hayira, but you talk about the Gedolei HaTorah, the story is repeated about the Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the story is repeated about Rav Moshe Feinstein. I recently heard that when in Rav Moshe's last years, so he had attendants around him all the time. Anyway, so a lady came in and asked to see Rav Moshe. What do you need? She said, I need to speak to the rabbi. I can't tell you. Said, what do you need? She says, look, for 20-something years, once a month I get a letter from my relatives in Russia, and Rabbi Feinstein translates them for me. Now, these were not scholarly letters of Divrei Torah. They were, you know, her letters from her relatives in Russia. Who did she find to translate them? She couldn't find the guy on the street. She went to Rav Moshe Feinstein to translate a letter. For 20-something years, he translated her letters. I didn't see it beneath his dignity to translate her letters. That's symbolic of the kinds of gedolim that Klal Yisrael had. Yeah.
What happened to our education system?
Right. There's an emphasis on scholarship, and there's a lack of emphasis on chesed, on kindnesses.
Why do we do service learning? Why don't we do what happens?
Right.
Somebody suggested last night that we start by getting our children to say hello and the Shabbos to adults. Come in and walk over to the adults and shoulder on the street and say good Shabbos, greet them. So that would be a good beginning.
I have a guddle in the making. My Mora Torim, I think, was the one who repeated this to us. But my Mutti, a tremendous softy, and he has a kid in his class who's allergic to almost everything in the world. And at some point, somebody was handing out things, and this kid wasn't able to have it. So Mutti said, well, if he's not going to have, I'm not going to have either. That's my Mati. And we got to keep him that way, though. It's not gonna last. You know that it's interesting that in yeshiva, I'll tell you something interesting. In yeshiva, and when I was in yeshiva, one seder a day, the Balvarov instituted that everybody had to learn with a shvachra. There were four siddurim in the day, four learning sessions. You had to give away one of those siddurim to learn with a student who was weaker than yourself. That was the way it was established in the yeshiva. I still have a relationship with two of those guys who I learned with, and I benefited tremendously from it as well. I had the chavrus with Chana Zellberger, who was a giant, who spent his night seders, I think for 2 years he learned with me, night seder, even though he was eons beyond me. So that is one way of inculcating it within the educational system, is by having children learn with shvachra students. I believe that WITS, by the way, has a similar system, that there is one seder a day that they learn with weaker students. So it doesn't have to be running around helping old ladies cross the street. It can be within the education system itself. The what?
I like somebody
to
help across the street.
And we do it with the girls. There is a Tam has a chesed system built in. Anyway, bottom line is, the Mornaim writes that this is, by the way, the Kabbalistic, the deeper Kabbalistic meaning behind why you find that the people who are Kabbalistically inclined do not tamper with the beard at all. Because the beard represents the integrity of these midas.
Say that again, please.
And in fact, they write that the Maharnaim writes that in addition to the Kabbalistic meanings, that this is really the deeper meaning of the prohibition in the Torah of leisashchis paziganech, that there's a prohibition against using a razor on the beard, because even if you're not going to keep the Kabbalistic thing of not touching the beard, of not removing any hairs, but certainly to destroy the source, the roots, is the denial of the fact that these midas stem from a higher place. The people who are really heavily into Kabbalah never even touched. You look at some of the Sephardic Mekubalim, they never even combed their beards. But among people of our tradition, they certainly combed, they brushed and combed their beards, even though they didn't. But if you look through, don't be offended by this, but if you look through many of the Sfarim that were kept in the libraries of Gedalia Yisrael, they treasured. If a hair fell out of their beard, they put it in the back of the sefer. It was not something which was discarded for this reason, because it represented the higher midas. Oh, that was good. Thank you very much. I was going to share that story with you. The Amshin of Rebbe in Reb Shimola, before he moved to Eretz Yisrael at the end of his years, but he lived in Crown Heights. And a fellow related that when he was a little kid, so he went up to Reb Shimola, and he had a long beard, and he began playing with his beard. And his father was horrified that, here he was playing with the Rebbe's beard. So he ran over to grab the kid, and Reb Shimla said to him, "Lazim, lazim, zolad hobm im vuzach unzahalten. Don't tamper with him, let him have something to hold on to." And he later related that when he went through life, he went through very difficult times, challenges to his integrity, and what kept him going was the feeling of Reb Shimla's beard in his hands. That's what kept him going.
But of course, our routine, as far as learning goes, learning is